Reading from Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, Volume 2, Preaching in Germany. September 3, 1969. Within a week of Prabhupada's arrival in Germany, the Janmashtami holiday occurred. Prabhupada observed Janmashtami, Krishna's birthday, quietly, not like the previous year in Montreal, when hundreds of Indians had gathered, along with disciples from many temples. Here, there were only about half a dozen devotees on hand. They fasted and then came to Prabhupada's apartment in the evening. Prabhupada talked about Krishna and they chanted together. Then, at 11:30 p.m., Prabhupada decided to have his head shaved, something he usually did once a month. Krishnadas carefully shaved his spiritual master's head while the others sat and watched. Although it was not the customary activity of Janmashtami night, the devotees loved associating with Prabhupada in this intimate way. Then at midnight, Prabhupada went with them to the temple where they broke their fast. The next day was Vyasa Puja Day, the celebration of Prabhupada's 74th birthday. That morning, a package arrived from New York containing several copies of the Vyasa Puja booklet, a 25-page paperback filled with homages from Srila Prabhupada's disciples. Months before, one of the devotees had discovered an old issue of a magazine published by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. The magazine contained a Vyasa Puja homage Prabhupada had written commemorating the appearance day of his own spiritual master. When the article had been brought to Prabhupada's attention, he said that his disciples could also write their own appreciations, just as he had done 40 years before. So the devotees in New York had gathered offerings from 17 different temples and had printed them all in a Vyasa Puja booklet. Prabhupada was very pleased to receive the little booklet, and he had one of the devotees read it aloud in the temple. When all the readings were finished, he explained how service and prayers were accepted by Krishna through the medium of the disciplic succession. Although outsiders might think that this man is becoming flattered in hearing his own eulogy, the real meaning of Vyasa Puja homage is that it is a test of how well the disciples were understanding Krishna consciousness and serving the spiritual master. Their praises were all going to the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the disciplic succession. And such praises were required training for the disciple, just as officers train soldiers in the military. But in this case, the training was in the feelings of pure consciousness. Sitting on the Vyasasan, Prabhupada looked out at his little band of disciples sitting before him on the linoleum floor of the well-lit storefront. "I thank you for improving Krishna consciousness," he said. "I am a sannyasi, so I have come here empty-handed. You are providing for me. What can I do? I can simply pray to Krishna for you. But don't be satisfied that you have understood. This knowledge should be distributed. In my old age, I have come to your country, carrying the order of my spiritual master to distribute. You are all young boys and girls, so take this and distribute it to the whole humanity. They will be happy." That morning, Prabhupada initiated 5 devotees, 3 regular brahmacharis, Vasudev Ramantu and Suchandra, who had all been chanting and serving for almost a year. And to the surprise of the other devotees, a married couple who had only recently been visiting the temple. When one of the devotees questioned the couple's eligibility, Prabhupada said that as long as they were chanting and following the 4 rules, they were eligible. Prabhupada named the couple Vishwanath and Kunti. He told the new initiates that if they would keep always in contact with the chanting of Hare Krishna, they would be always purified. He compared the purification required before one could enter the spiritual world to the adjustment required by astronauts before they could enter the moon. But as far as we are concerned, we don't think that they were actually successful. Prabhupada also told the initiates that on behalf of Krishna, he was working to distribute knowledge, and that those who are actually fortunate would take it. "Our job is to teach people and give practical suggestion," Prabhupada explained. Those who are fortunate will take. Otherwise, we shall go on canvassing. Each person was independent and could take or not. Although God would never interfere with their independence, they should understand that the proper use of their independence was to become unalloyed servants of Krishna. Prabhupada was giving his new disciples what he knew to be the sublime gift for human life. But they were all individual spirit souls, free agents, and they had to decide out of their own free will to surrender to Krishna or not. In the case of Vishwanath and Kunti, Prabhupada was obviously taking a risk, but he wanted to give them a chance. Every morning Prabhupada would take a stroll to one of the nearby parks, sometimes with a few disciples and sometimes only with Shivananda. Sometimes while he walked along the waterfront, Prabhupada would ask about shipbuilding and related industries, and Krishnadas would answer. When Prabhupada asked Krishnadas what the population of Hamburg was, he knew. Prabhupada began to jokingly call Krishnadas stats because he knew so many statistics. One morning, while Stats was answering Prabhupada's questions about various cranes used in shipbuilding, Prabhupada turned to the others and said, "You see, although I am the guru and I am taking you back to Godhead, that doesn't mean that I cannot learn from him." Another morning, Prabhupada and Shivananda were walking alone in the park. Because of Shivananda's tight schedule and lack of sufficient sleep, he was feeling tired. Prabhupada noticed Shivananda's fatigue and suggested they sit down on a park bench. Prabhupada sat down carefully while Shivananda sprawled. You know what sprawled means? It's kind of like the, you know, sprawling is like, you know, so he was little untidy. Exchanging looks with Shivananda, Prabhupada sat forward even straighter, removing his back from the backrest. Seeing the great contrast in their sitting postures, Shivananda sat up straight. So Prabhupada didn't tell him, he just gave him the idea. Back in the temple, Shivananda told the devotees about the incident. The next day when Prabhupada went on his walk, about 5 devotees accompanied him to the park. Again, Prabhupada said, "All right, let's sit down here." The 2 bark benches faced each other, and as Prabhupada sat down carefully with his back straight, all the devotees sat very straight opposite him on the bench, looking over at Prabhupada. Jai Shishi Radha Gopinath Ki, Jai Shishi Jagannath Baladeva Subhadra Ki, Shishi Gauranitai Ki. Seeing his disciples sitting seriously in a rigid line, in an obvious imitation of himself, Prabhupada began to laugh. One morning, Prabhupada and a few devotees walked past a church situated on its own plot of land, surrounded by several other buildings belonging to the church. Admiring the community-like arrangement, Prabhupada said to Shivananda, "So you will get this church for us?" "I will see, Prabhupada." In India, Prabhupada said there are situations very similar to this. There is a temple, and around the temple, all the devotees are living. It's a nice situation. Another morning, Prabhupada remarked about the extraordinary amount of garbage in front of the houses. Shivananda explained that this was a monthly function in German cities, a throw-out day, when everybody puts out junk and things from their attic that the garbage collectors ordinarily do not take. On throw-out day, the garbage collectors come with a special truck and remove all oversized garbage. Prabhupada noticed all sorts of usable items, and as he walked, he would point with his cane, "Why don't you take that for the temple?" "Well, Prabhupada, we already have one of those." After a while, Prabhupada would investigate another person's garbage and point with his cane, "Yes, get that, get that." Repeatedly, Shivananda explained that the temple already had the articles, but Prabhupada continued to point things out. Finally, Prabhupada found an oriental rug sitting on the curb. "Yes, now this you can use." And Prabhupada had them carry the rug back to the temple. Isn't that funny? Prabhupada's walking on. It's really cool. The rug turns out to be in such good shape that after cleaning it, they placed it in the temple room. The weather continued cold and overcast with only about 2 days of sunshine during Prabhupada's 3-week stay. After a walk, one cold, drizzly morning. Drizzly is like a very fine rain. It's like, you don't really get wet, but you just kind of drizzle. After a cold walk one drizzly morning, while Prabhupada was waiting with Shivananda for the elevator, Shivananda was rubbing his hands together. "You're cold," Prabhupada said, and he touched Shivananda's hands. "Feel my hand." It was warm. "If you keep this area of the body warm," Prabhupada put his hands on his chest, "then the rest of the body will be warm." Shivananda could not help but feel overwhelming affection for Prabhupada, even in such small reciprocations. Every morning walk would reveal many such treasurable little incidents. Shivananda was not an experienced cook, so Prabhupada taught him. The apartment kitchen was small, about 6 feet square, with an electric stove, a sink, and a little counter space. When Prabhupada said that Shivananda made good eggplant pakoras, Shivananda made eggplant pakoras daily. Then one morning Prabhupada asked, "You're not cooking that eggplant again, are you?" Prabhupada then taught Shivananda some other things to cook, including a special way to cook cabbage, a way to cook chapatis by cooking them on one side in the oven, taking them out and then cooking them on the other side on the electric burner. Prabhupada asked for mangoes, but it was difficult to find them in Hamburg. Those that Shivananda could find were still green. Prabhupada instructed Shivananda to put the peeled mangoes in a sugar solution for a week. When the mangoes turned black, they became a kind of mango chutney. Shivananda knew Prabhupada's concern for not washing anything, so he asked him what to do with the mango peels. Not wasting anything. Prabhupada seemed surprised, but he said, "If you want to do something with the peels, then put them in mustard oil with salt and turmeric." Devotees tried this, but they found the taste awful. Except for Mandali Bhadra, who liked them. For breakfast, Shivananda would usually take whatever was left from Prabhupada's plate, but one morning there was very little left, so Shivananda began cooking cereal for himself. He had just begun eating the cereal in the other room when Prabhupada entered. Prabhupada took one look at Shivananda's cereal and told him to come into the kitchen. There, Prabhupada showed Shivananda how to make halava. Prabhupada didn't like the porridge. He was like, "Why are you eating that?" Sometimes they say oats is for horses, right? Especially coarse oats. It's hard to digest. So anyway, I like porridge, so what to do? So there Prabhupada showed Shivananda how to make halava, cooked farina and butter and mixing it with boiling sugar water. "When you want something to eat," Prabhupada said, "then you can make this halava." Prabhupada still had his small, he thought this was uneatable. How could you're obviously eating something that's not proper. You're just eating it because you know, not that you like it. It's not good for you. So you should eat halva instead of porridge. Prabhupada still had his small Radha Krishna deities in Hamburg, and they sat on the little altar shelf within his closet. Whatever Shivananda would cook, Prabhupada would have him make up a plate and then bring it and offer it with prayers to Radha and Krishna. One day, while Shivananda was cooking, Prabhupada came to the kitchen door and motioned for Shivananda to come out. He then led Shivananda to the open closet before the deities of Radha and Krishna. Gesturing to the deities, Prabhupada said, "It's not for me that you're cooking, it's for them." Prabhupada had come to Hamburg knowing the center was undeveloped, but he wanted to encourage the devotees there and give Shivananda the opportunity to serve him personally. On Prabhupada's behalf, Shivananda had so submissively come here and started the center. Now Prabhupada had come to encourage him by engaging him as his walking companion, cook and masseur. One day Shivananda was massaging Prabhupada's head when Prabhupada began to explain that as a person gets older, the body does not digest food as well. The stomach begins producing bad airs, but by massage these airs become redistributed. Shivananda became concerned and thoroughly absorbed himself in giving Prabhupada his massage. Every day at 11, Shivananda would come in and give Prabhupada his massage. One morning, he entered the room and found Prabhupada sitting in a chair by the window, his head covered with a blanket, chanting Hare Krishna on his beads. "You should pray to Krishna for me," Prabhupada said to Shivananda. Shivananda was surprised. How could he pray for his spiritual master? He began to stammer, "Well, Prabhupada, I don't think it would work." "Why not? You're a devotee of Krishna." Another time, Prabhupada asked Shivananda to massage around his heart. He asked him to push hard. Shivananda thought he was rubbing Prabhupada too hard, but Prabhupada said, just push harder. Shivananda asked Prabhupada if his health was all right, but Prabhupada seemed annoyed that he had asked. Again, Shivananda expressed remorse. It must not be very good for you here in Hamburg. He said, you were staying in Los Angeles, and there were so many devotees there, and the situation was so nice. Now you've come here, and there's practically nobody. That's all right, Prabhupada said softly. We are doing our preaching work, whether there are a lot of devotees or not. In the spring of 1972, after conducting groundbreaking ceremonies at his three new projects in Mayapur, Vrindavan, and Bombay, Srila Prabhupada left India for a world preaching tour. The contested Bombay land purchase had turned into a drawn-out struggle that drew Srila Prabhupada's thoughts anxiously to Bombay whenever he traveled. Yet he preached with full presence of mind from Australia to Hong Kong, to Tokyo, to Hawaii, to Los Angeles. While in Los Angeles, Prabhupada decided to visit Mexico, where his disciples had maintained an ISKCON temple for a year. See, I was doing some research for a book by Tejas Prabhu. It's about Srila Prabhupada. And one of the things he asked, he wanted to do was have a list of everywhere where Prabhupada went, because Tejas was in Delhi. So he wanted to know, where did Prabhupada go to and come from? Where did he come from when he came to Delhi, and where did he go to when he left? Because it helps with the stories, like, oh, he came from Vrindavan, so that means it was in, like, that March 72, where... So I was going through it, and what struck me was Prabhupada's schedule. Prabhupada practically didn't sit still. I mean, there were some times when he'd stay some time in Los Angeles or sometimes Bombay or like that, but Prabhupada was constantly traveling. And if you look, because you're going through, you're trying to find Delhi, so it's Hamburg, and like this list. You know, Prabhupada was 70 years old, and he was constantly traveling, sometimes just one day in one place and then off and... Anyway, I was really impressed. I hadn't sort of been aware so much of Prabhupada's hectic schedule, because it didn't stop. It was just continuous traveling. So. And if anyone's traveled, I just came back from India and I had jet lag. And, you know, for a few days I'm just like, nah, I'm useless. And then Prabhupada didn't. If he suffered from jet lag, he didn't show it. He would just, wherever he had come from, wherever he arrived, he would take up the schedule of where he was. He wouldn't say, okay, I need to rest because I've had a, you know, like that, right? So sometimes there's 5 or 10 hours differences, and he would just start with the schedule in the temple. So amazing. Prabhupada is amazing. Mexico City. So now he's going to Mexico. June 2nd, 1972. Accompanied by his secretary, Shama Sundar, and his servant, Nanda Kumar, Srila Prabhupada flew into Mexico City in the afternoon. When they disembarked, no devotees were in sight. While his secretary and servant speculated on the circumstances, Srila Prabhupada, appearing tired, sat down on his suitcase and chanted, waiting. So now I'll probably say the opposite of what I just said, so this is good. You'll probably do something else. Anyway, after almost an hour, a Mexican couple approached. As the woman bowed down before Prabhupada, the man introduced himself. He was Mr. Ariza, a lawyer, and the lady, Mrs. Adela Diaz. They knew the Hare Krishna devotees and recognized their spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada. Having just come from the temple, the couple told Prabhupada of the devotees' preparation for his arrival. Srila Prabhupada smiled and said he was waiting for his disciples to come and get him. Mrs. Diaz offered to take Srila Prabhupada and his party to the temple in her car, and he agreed. Somehow they all squeezed into her small red car and headed for the city. It is a shame they have missed you, Mrs. Diaz says. Oh my goodness. Chitshukananda, the temple president, has decorated a large car with flowers to receive you at the airport. Srila Prabhupada commented dryly, what good is a big car if it is not here? They arrived at the ISKCON Center just as Chitshukananda and a party of devotees were arriving at the airport. Srila Prabhupada entered the temple through the kitchen door. A single devotee was cooking. Startled to see Prabhupada, the devotee offered frantic obeisances before him, and Prabhupada asked, "Where are the devotees?" Mr. Ariza and Mrs. Diaz escorted him into the main room, a large open area where devotees and dozens of guests were waiting. When the people saw Prabhupada, they began to kneel before him with folded hands in the style of Catholic worshippers. Bless. He walked forward, pausing to gently touch their heads. A rain of flower petals caused Prabhupada to look up. From the balcony railing of the second floor mezzanine, devotees showered flowers upon Prabhupada and his party. Ornate flower arrangements decorated the walls. One arrangement formed figures of Radha and Krishna, and another the words of the Maha Mantra. They are very artistic, Prabhupada appreciated, just like in India. Belatedly, devotees rushed in from the airport. Conch shells blew, kirtan began. Chitshukananda arrived, breathless and apologetic, and offered obeisances before Prabhupada. "You've created a very nice transcendental atmosphere," Prabhupada said to him. "Oh, Srila Prabhupada," Chitshukananda replied, "it is only because you are here that it is very nice. Otherwise, I cannot do anything." Chitshukananda showed Srila Prabhupada to a room on the second floor, where on an altar small deities of Jagannath, Subhadra, and Baladev stood. The freshly painted floor hadn't dried. He's walking into a room where they just finished painting the floor. Sorry. Oh, Krishna. So it's like sticky. Oh, Governor Prabhupada, he used to come, because devotees were often, they'd come to a new place and devotees were often renovating before Prabhupada arrived to try and make it more nice. So everywhere he went was the smell of fresh paint. There was something very common. Oh. The freshly painted floor hadn't dried, and a devotee spread a cloth for Prabhupada so he could stand before the deities. Although the paint was tacky, it means like sticky, Prabhupada pushed the cloth away and paid obeisances on the floor, which retained the faint imprint of his soles and body. Oh. If anyone knows how long it takes for paint to dry, it isn't very long. You know, so this, it was like they were painting it overnight or something like that. It was just a few, you know. I don't know. How long does it take for paint to dry? 3 hours? 4 hours? 6 hours? It's just like, quickly paint them. Huh? A whole day before it becomes not sticky. Okay, so I'll stay before they were quickly. Anyway, very funny. Very sweet. Returning to the main room. I mean, Prabhupada didn't comment on it. He wasn't like, what are you? You know, I'm tickled because I'm silly, but it was funny. Returning to the main room, Prabhupada sat on his decorated Vyasasan and spoke to the waiting guests and devotees. After a short lecture, translated phrase by phrase by Lakshmi Priyadasi, Prabhupada retired to his room. It was about 6 p.m. While Prabhupada rested, the devotees and guests, now numbering several hundred, gathered in the main hall below Srila Prabhupada's room and began a mighty kirtan. After an hour, they were still going strong. After 2 hours, Prabhupada's servant came out on the balcony and shouted down, "Stop the kirtan!" The chanting subsided and the servant went back into Prabhupada's room. Srila Prabhupada asked from his bed, "Why have they stopped the kirtan?" "I thought it was keeping you awake, Prabhupada," Nandakumar said. "I can rest with kirtan," Prabhupada said pleasantly. "It doesn't bother me. It is transcendental. Tell them to go on." So then he has to go back. Nandakumar then reappeared on the balcony above the crowd and called down, "Prabhupada." "Prabhupada wants to know why the kirtan stopped." The person was looking at me like, "Because you told us to." Oh, people are so funny. I love it. Oh, that's fantastic. Oh, thank you for writing this. It's just, oh. Okay, hold on. Prabhupada wants to know why the kirtan stopped, so started up again. The crowd cheered and again began chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. creating waves of blissful sound vibration that rang through the building. Even in the privacy of his room, Prabhupada was enjoying a unique reciprocation with the people of Mexico on his first evening in their country through the medium of the holy name. Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Gaur Premanandi.